And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Top of the sixth, and rookie sensation Ricky Vaughn on the pitch now. You can close the book on Kelder.
Thank God.
Relax, Ricky. We're only four runs down. We're still in this game.
You take it to him?
Oh, all right.
Look, man, guy gets a second, first sign indicator.
Vaughn, a juvenile delinquent in the offseason in his major league debut.
I'm gonna light your ass up, meat.
Vaughn into the windup in his first offering. Just a bit outside. He tried the corner and missed. Ball four. Ball eight. Low, and Vaughn has walked the bases loaded on 12 straight pitches. Boy, how can these guys lay off pitches that close?
Greetings, sports fans. Today is Wednesday, January 22nd. Welcome to Sports Kings from Queens. This is episode 151. I'm Gino. I'm here with Kevin. I'm here with Darren. Please catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, follow us on YouTube. Join our pages. Give us a look. We'd love to hear from you. Send us some comments. We'll be sure to respond. We got some stuff going on in the NFL. We're on to the conference championship week. We are now down to the final four. We'll go around the rest of the world of sports, but we're going to start it off. We crowned an NCAA football champion. Ohio State beats Notre Dame 34-23. Ryan Day and Ohio State won its first national title since 2014. Ohio State outgained Notre Dame 445-308 in yards. Notre Dame was down 21-7 at the half and then 31-7 after three. They tried to get some points back in the fourth quarter, but it just wasn't enough. And Ohio State goes on to be the champion. Darren?
Listen, not a great game, but at least it was entertaining toward the end. Probably the best way I could put it. Notre Dame had an amazing opening drive. You couldn't script it any better, right? 18 plays, 75 yards, 9 minutes and 45 seconds, keeping Ohio State off the field. I mean, Kev, it couldn't get any sweeter than that to start out for an Irish fan, correct?
Oh, I mean, it was shocking the way they manhandled Ohio State down the field. I mean, a lot of it. Well, I mean, 98% I think of the offense for the whole game, but especially on that drive, was Leonard.
You know, yeah, they converted fourth and one twice on that one. Yeah, I mean, he was
great. Nine times for 34 yards. It was like they got just enough yardage to get it to third and short or fourth and short every time, converted every time, and just fast-moving 9 minutes, like you said, Darren, 9:45 off the clock. I mean, no better start than you could have asked for if you're Notre Dame fan.
Absolutely. So then last week I pointed out that, you know, Notre Dame has to punch him in the mouth and let's see how Ohio State responds. And Ohio State did respond.
Yep.
They went back 11 plays, 75 yards and 6:05 they didn't finish their drive till the second quarter, tied the game up at seven again. You know, just one of those things where they have so much skill and you watch Howard was very accurate. And Notre Dame plays man.
Oh, yeah.
And you play man against this team, and it's the biggest challenge you have. I mean, they played hard, but it was a little bit strange, Kevin. From there, it just seemed like, Ohio State was untouchable, correct?
Yeah. I mean, the next two drives, you know, Notre Dame got hurt by their own penalties, the false start and the hold to force the three and out. Ohio State, almost the same as the first drive, 10 plays, 75 yards in 6 minutes. Jukins capped that one off, and then the next drive they got into a third down, and it was a bad snap. Leonard fumbled it, recovered it, but they had forced another punt, so it was another three and out. And the defense at that point, after back-to-back three and outs and long drives, they were dead. And Ohio State goes down and scores right before the end of the half to go up 21-7. Another 80-yard drive.
Yeah, I mean, it was just long drive after long drive, and Judkins was the guy. G?
Yep.
They only had – Ohio State only had three first-half possessions. They scored on all three.
Yeah,
both. Like, you know, and then you get into the third quarter. They got two – they have two possessions. It's a touchdown and a field goal.
Well, the first one, they get the ball to come out of the half. And after all the long drives, this one was five plays, 75 yards. It wasn't much of anything. 70-yard run by Judkins just kind of – put him in play. I think it was the second or third play of the drive, and that was that.
But basically, Notre Dame couldn't stop them. They scored in their first five possessions. before giving the ball up in the third quarter on the fumble, which Kev was just talking about. And then in the fourth quarter is the first time Ohio State punted, and then they added that late field goal. But, you know, they basically got to the fourth quarter without even punting. The guy had one punt the whole game. So
listen, they were in the second possession of the third quarter before he threw an incompletion. You know, I mean, you had a lot of things that were going right for Ohio State. And Notre Dame, I mean, the one thing, I know they had a couple sacks in this game, Kev, but they really didn't get pressure on Howard.
No.
And without Riley Mills, it didn't show against Penn State, but it showed here. And watching this game, I caught myself thinking that Penn State might have been a little bit more of an effective game in this matchup just because of the knowledge of the two teams. Not saying that, you know, Notre Dame wasn't worthy. They certainly were. But I caught myself thinking to myself, wow, Penn State probably defenses this team a little bit differently and a little bit better because they did play them earlier in the year, even though it was a home game for them.
Yep.
But so then we go 28-7, right? Notre Dame goes for it on the fourth down. They really don't. They do the fake punt.
The fake
at
punt.
Their own 27, I understood why they did it. Pass wasn't great, but it wasn't awful. But he didn't hold on. Incompletion, was, give him the ball at the 27.
Boy, you'd love to see him make that catch. You know, it was
to see him make the catch.
Like you said, not a great pass, but catchable with some effort.
Yeah, you know, the ball was in his hands. It was low. He was diving the whole thing, but he's got to come up with it. And for the first time all day, Notre Dame holds him to a field goal. So it's 31-7. And then Notre Dame shows some life, right? They get the pass interference on the 3rd and 19. That keeps the drive alive. Then they hit Greathouse, who had a huge second half.
Oh,
huge, and he played great against Penn State. Greathouse, only a sophomore. You're going to be hearing his name a lot. He'll be a top of the draft kind of guy, the way it looked like he played against Ohio State the other day. And so they get the 34-yard touchdown to Greathouse, convert the two-point conversion. It's 31-15. So you're saying, all right, you know, probably nothing, but at least they're showing a little fight.
Yeah.
And Ohio State starts to move. They pass to Egbuka. And what a strip play by Bowen as they're inside the 30. And they recover it. And you're saying, oh, wow. Because we were just texting, and I was like, they need a turnover. Flat out, they need a freaking turnover. You can't do it with three and outs. You need to do something dramatic and change the momentum. They get the turnover, and they move the ball. Big pass to Greathouse for 30 yards on 39. They convert a 4th and 5 to Greathouse down to the 11. They get the defensive hold down to the 8, and then all of a sudden they go backwards on 3 plays. They lose a yard running, a couple incompletions, and then they go for the field goal. Now, this is – thoughts on it, Kev? Thoughts on the field goal at that point?
You're still down 16. I'd rather go for it, knowing that if you don't make it, you're still paying them inside their 10-yard line. I thought they needed touchdowns at that point. If it was, you know – because you – the field goal, you still need 2 touchdowns to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if this was a 13-point game that cut it to 10, where it's a touchdown and a field goal with 2 drives to tie it, I could see it. When you're down 16 and you still need 2 touchdowns to win the game, I don't think the field goal does enough for you there.
I agree.
I agree.
I agree exactly with what Kev said, because the other thing you got to ask yourself at some point is, do you think you're getting the ball 3 times here? Do you think after this you're going to have 2 more possessions? Because, you know, if you're even questioning the fact that you don't think you may get 2 more possessions out of this, you got to go for it. You got to go and least, you know. But
with the amount of pass interferences that Ohio State committed all season and committed in this game, I think you had to try to take a play. You had to try to go after the corners and see if you could get a call. Stay away from downs, go after the corners and see if you can get a pass interference or a catch. But I agree with you. But they missed the field goal.
Missed
the short field goal. I mean, and
that couldn't have been louder off the upright.
Oh my God. The South Carolina transfer Jeter had been automatic up to that point, all playoff long, 50 yards, 40 yards, didn't matter. And then the short one. So they do all this, they miss it, they give them better field position than they would have started with had they went for it and missed, right? So you say to yourself, all right, so now it's over, right? And, you know, but then they force the punt. They do.
I think Ohio State got very, very conservative there.
Absolutely. They go 3, I think 4 and out it was maybe. Notre Dame goes 6 plays, 80 yards, 30-yard touchdown to Greathouse yet again, who's the star of the second half. They get the two-point conversion again, 31-23, and you're saying, wow, if they would have went for it, they could be, it could be a different situation. Or at worst of the, you know, you're in the same spot, but it could have been better, and but they missed the field goal. But then Ohio State gets the ball back, and then on the 3rd and 11, Kev, they go up top. Everything that we said that they wouldn't do, they hadn't done in the previous drive, they decide to go for it all to Smith. And I guess that's it, right? 56-yard play to the 10.
Yeah.
They were conservative the first few plays. I mean, they were working the first few plays there. But then Notre Dame got the one series where they got a couple of negative plays, got it to 3rd and 11, and sent the house, left the corner on an island out there. No bump and run, no press coverage. It was, I'm going to give you a 10-yard cushion. And Smith still, I mean, he's so great. You got to do something to disrupt his route, and there
you
got to
hit him off the line. Nothing has no choice,
and he gets free down the sideline, and the blitz didn't get there. I mean, that's the other half of it too. Is the blitz has to get there? It didn't, and it was wide open, 56 yards, and game over at that point. I know they kicked the field goal with 26 seconds, but that was academic at that point. Game's over.
The funny thing is, as much as we make fun of it, even with that field goal kick, had they made that field goal, they would still only been down one score. And I was against kicking the field goal as it was. As he said, he was right about getting the ball back twice, but the second time you got it back with 26 seconds. You know, Riley Leonard, for all the strengths he has, they're not a fast play offense. I mean, they had the one drive, 6 plays, 80 yards, but for the most part, this is a team that is not – they play great from in front. They're not going to play great from behind. Listen, Ohio State, you can call them the best team money can buy, whatever. They got to do something about the NIL where it's somewhat even about how much each team can spend. Otherwise, we're just going to be staring at the same 8-10 teams every year.
Fighting college football, huh?
I mean, that's what's going to be, though, right? It's going to be you see how the NFL needs it to happen that way to keep teams, except for the Jets, you know, competitive. It only Major League Baseball and EPL allow you to go roughshod. Gino? You have your hand up.
So
I can't hear you. Okay.
Playoffs are over. Was this now a success? Can we call the 12 team playoff a success?
Overall, yes. The games may not have been that great, but I think the concept is a hit.
Listen, the reality is that Penn State Notre Dame, a game alone, was one that kept everybody gripped. And then you had Texas playing Ohio State the next night, and you had two great semifinals. The final game kept you watching into the fourth quarter. It was only the first round that really sucked, where not one game was competitive. So I think the home
rounds had some, you know, but you know, like you said,
there was a couple good, a couple bad. Yeah, I mean, yeah. But the interesting thing was that I think I liked the idea of the home field advantage in that first round a little bit. I kind of enjoyed that. I think that we're going to go to 16 teams because there's too much money in it not to. It just adds more teams into the fun and more opportunities and more games where they can sell them for more money. I mean, that's just what it comes down to. But I don't think that you can – I thought it was going to be a nightmare, and I enjoyed it. But the key is actually – I'm a college football fan. I'm going to watch anyway. So is Kevin. Gino, you are the one that has to answer the question.
Listen, I think it was a great success. I mean, you got me watching. I think we all agree that there's probably a couple of tweaks to the system we want to see. You know, one has to do with the seedings and, you know, there's a couple of things, but I think for the most part, it did what it was supposed to do. You got me involved, and then I'm the one. I was the guy who's interested in it, but not crazy interested in it, who hated all these other bowl games. And you got me watching, you know, 11 games here.
The funny thing is you always watch the championship. And you might have watched little parts of other games, but you never made an appointment. You made an appointment this year. You made it kind of like something you tried to watch. But what you said about the seedings is so true, because they seeded it all out. And the only one – all you need is one thing to stand out. The 8 seed was favored over the 1 seed.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, well, it does not get any more garious than that when you when you sit there and look at something like that. You know,
you look at this, you look at the seedings, and obviously you had Oregon was a clear cut one, no doubt about it. They deserved it. They were the only undefeated team. Then you had to go conference champions 2, 3, and 4. Well, I'm going by last year's criterion where Florida State got booted out of the 4-team playoff because Daniels got hurt. Well, Beck got hurt. Should they still have been the 2 seed? Or they should they have been bumped down more?
You meant Travis, right? You meant Travis.
I mean Travis. Said, Travis.
Yeah.
Yeah, listen, probably not if the
Jordan
is the
Trandon. Yeah, not Jordan Daniels. No, I've got Jordan Daniels on my mind. I meant Travis, yeah.
The answer is probably not. That you know what I mean? That's the answer.
And Boise State and Arizona State were not 3 and 4. Then the committee decided we're not going to penalize Penn State and Texas for losing conference championship games. But you look at Penn State versus who's the 5 and Ohio State who's the 8. Ohio State beat Penn State.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And they both lost to Oregon. Who should have been seeded higher?
Yeah.
I mean, that's an argument.
You would argue that's one, but everything else was a mistake.
Listen, I think that those things are the things we think they need to adjust. But I, you know, for me, I think this was a great success. I mean,
And the only other point to go to 16 is to avoid the top 4 seeds from having too long a layoff because we saw that. And I know that we got into some of the 2, 3, and 4. Maybe we weren't deserving of 2, 3, and 4. But Oregon coming out and losing in the first round like the way they did, they were rusty in the first half, obviously.
Absolutely.
And it showed.
It definitely
showed. You go to 16 where everybody plays at home the first weekend. You clear that up.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Any final college points before we move?
Again, my only point is that they have to figure out how to somewhat try to balance the NIL a little bit. Just, I mean, if you root for us, if you happen to follow or went to or root for a school that is not a preeminent school, your chances of getting into the tournament, so to speak, are very slim. And if you do get in, you're going to get a 15 or 16 seed, and you're going to get slapped down so quick because you just don't have the money to compete. Now, listen, this doesn't go for any SEC school at all except for Vanderbilt, right? Every single one, maybe Mississippi State. The rest of them are all going to pay, right? Big Ten, you know, Northwestern won't be competitive. But with Indiana getting in there, now you say to yourself, okay, even Minnesota can find a way. Even Iowa can find a way. Illinois can find a way. So you feel like even those type of schools. But when you're looking at the other conferences that are somewhat major, you know, they just aren't going to get the TV funds like those two conferences are where they can spend plus the NIL. So it's, the support from the alumni. So we'll see what happens. But overall, very exciting college football season.
Yep.
And two really, you know, listen, I don't like Ohio State. I don't like Notre Dame. But two classy teams. I thought they both played with a lot of class. I didn't see a lot of crap. I didn't see a lot of trash talking garbage. I didn't see any fight before the game or any of the stuff that, you know, sometimes seems entertaining in a snippet, but overall puts a black eye on the sport. You saw class, and you saw that from Notre Dame and Ohio State in their last two games, at least against Texas and Penn State as well. So I thought we've had some really good stuff, but I think that'll sum up our college football season successfully.
All right, we'll head over to the NFL. So we'll start the division round. So we'll go in chronological order. So
little joke between Gino and Kevin and I. Anyway,
so starting Eagles Rams first.
First game on Saturday, Kansas City beats Houston 23-14. Patrick Mahomes and Kansas City continued their dominance in the playoffs to advance to their 7th consecutive AFC championship game. This one included some questionable penalty calls, which I'm sure we'll talk about. Mahomes connected with Kelce for 117 yards and a touchdown. Chiefs defense sacked C.J. Stroud 8 times, capitalizing on Houston's special teams mistakes, which included Kaimi Fairbairn's 2 missed field goals and a missed extra point. With the win, the Chiefs remain on track to pursue an unprecedented 3rd consecutive Super Bowl title. Darren?
Yeah. So we'll start with the most important thing. The spread in this game was 9.5. Chiefs led by 11 late, took the safety. Now, some of us got the bet in at 8.5 and are just fine. But others that might have bet closer to the game were probably very, very upset. That late safety killed some people and elated some others. Just a thought. I think the bookies did very well with that, in my opinion. Game was very much scrutinized due to the calls, like you said, and it didn't seem like they were favoring the Chiefs on these calls in particular. Also, but the Texans didn't lose the game because of penalties called.
No,
they lost the game because they missed two field goals, they missed an extra point, they had 8 sacks against, and they scored 12 freaking points. You lost the game because you scored 12. The penalties did affect some points for the Chiefs, but you scored 12, Kev.
And to add to the special teams, not just the kicker, but the kickoff return on the opening kickoff. Remigio goes 63 yards.
That just
set the tone. I mean, the Texas defense stepped up big time. They're holding to the field goal, but again, it was another special teams blunder.
Now, I don't know how you get away with this and how you're not cut on the field, but after he goes 63 yards and then they get the 15 yards, Boyd throws the helmet to give him the 15 yards.
Yep.
As the special teams coach is yelling at him, he shoves him. He
pushes him. Yeah.
I mean, what the hell is that? So I'm sitting there and I'm reading stuff about this, the next day. And there was a football coach who also happened to be a black coach. And he was like, it's not Boyd's fault. And what he said was, people have been telling this kid he's special and he's beyond reproach his entire life. Not just specifically him, the athlete. He was just saying he was blaming the parents. He's like, the parents, he goes, football coach can only do so much. The only reason you would push like that is because your parents did not raise you right, is basically what this guy was going off on. And I thought it was an interesting take. This game also, the Chiefs hadn't played their starters in basically 3.5 weeks, and that was pretty obvious. I mean,
yeah,
defensively, they started off a little slow, but they picked up, and they usually do on the Spags. But the offense never really seemed to click. I thought that, the Chiefs, Mahomes was missing open receivers. The one thing that stood out to me besides the rustiness, is that Houston really didn't do anything to take Kelce away like everybody does. The Chiefs only completed passes to Worthy. No other receiver caught a pass. All right? Marquise Brown was targeted twice. No targets for Hopkins. No targets for Smith-Schuster. No targets for Watson. And Worthy was targeted 6 times. I know they only threw the ball, I think, 24 times, but he was thrown to the tight ends. And I couldn't believe that they allowed Kelce to be the guy. I thought it was just a bad game plan by Houston's defense, in my opinion.
I mean, they gave up 212 yards, and what, 117 was to Kelce?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 117.
That was 90-something yards for the rest of the offense.
You're right. Listen, you got to remember they ran backwards 18 yards on the last play to kill a little bit of that. But even still, we're talking about 108 yards for the rest of the offense, same thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They did not run the ball effectively.
They didn't even try.
And it's Travis Kelce in the playoffs off, basically 3 weeks of rest. Of course he's going to come out a lot stronger than he's been looking for most of the season. And you've got to you really have to make sure you double Kelce.
Yeah. Let the receivers beat you at that point, right?
Made no sense to me.
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing I'll say is, and Mahomes did not look good. And listen, the first field goal the Chiefs got, there was a penalty on a hit him in the helmet on a third down that would have gotten him off the field. Now, from the refs, I sound like a Chiefs apologist here. Will Anderson did nothing to try to lower his head and not hit him.
No,
when his follow through really he hit him second up there. You can't sit there and say that the referee, not in super slow mo, is going to necessarily catch that one. I didn't find that one as egregious. It was wrong because when we got to watch it on super slow-mo from a different angle than the refs at, you see he hit his chest, the chest first, and then he hit him in the head. That's why they couldn't overturn it, because he did effectively touch the head, and you see the head jerk. That's why they call it. like you saw Chris Jones make a sack, and he comes in on Stroud, and he lowers his body. Will Anderson didn't do that. He's a young player, and maybe he just didn't think about it, but he stood straight up and ran like straight into him, but he hit him in the chest first. It shouldn't have been called, but that gave 3 points to the Chiefs, right?
Yep.
And you know, that shouldn't have happened. Then, you know, Houston comes down and misses the 55-yard field goal, right? But I don't call that a miss. I mean, 55 yards outside. Listen, the NFL has changed. From when we were kids, a 50-yard field goal was considered a big deal. Now it's not. Now, to me, 55 and beyond are the ones that are tough. If you're 54 and within, I expect my kicker to make it. I'm at that point now. Be honest with you, I just am. It's changed dramatically.
Outdoors in 10-degree weather? Why are you trying a 55-yarder?
It's a 50. He's got the leg, but you can tell it shattered his confidence, G. He didn't seem like he.
I agree.
He was a mess after that kick. He missed it by so much that he didn't know how to read the wind. I don't know. I wasn't listening to Feely at that moment, so I don't know if he was saying he struggled before in pregame. I don't know what was going on, but you had that. The Chiefs, then they get the big play to Kelce. To get him in position, and they go up 13-3 on the pass to the run by Kareem Hunt, 49-yard pass to Kelce. He gets and then Kareem Hunt punches it in. They're up 13-3. They're playing like crap, and they're up 10. And it was just kind of surprising how that happened. Houston gets the three back, the 24-yard pass to Mechie, but a sack by Wharton and a holding penalty. They have to settle for a 48-yarder. Which Fairbairn hits. So it's 13-6, and you're saying, okay, we got a game. And Houston gets the ball to start first to start the second half. And they go down the field, and they have a great drive. Oh, my God, 82 yards, 15 plays, convert a second and 19, convert a second and 14. Mixon takes it to the house from 13-12, and they miss the extra point.
I mean, 10 and a half minutes. You've kept Mahomes now off the field for how long?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just like Notre Dame started the game with an impressive drive, this was a equally impressive drive to start the second half of the game. And like you say, you just take the air out, but when you don't tie it.
It was ridiculous, right? Then the Chiefs have their best drive of the game, but it's all aided on an egregious call, actually, not a questionable call. First one I could call questionable. This one was egregious. So it wasn't third down. It wasn't like they were giving up the ball after the play, but they got a free 15-yard first down. Mahomes is dancing around. He doesn't give himself up till really, really late. 202 comes in and hits him. Probably didn't need to, but might have been committed in the air. It's hard to tell if he was committed or if he went in a little bit late. But even still, you can't call that. He's a running back at that point. Yep. You know, I mean, once he's out in the pocket, you can't give him that call. You just can't when he's scrambling like that. Because how many times have you seen him fake he's going to go out of bounds and he runs up? Or he runs you over with your shoulder and he lands on you. You've seen
that's Mahomes still to come later.
And Darren, that's the exact reason why something with that rule needs to change, because that's exactly what they do. He's trying to either one, bait him into hitting him, or two, if he's not going to tackle me, I'm going to get an extra 3 yards. I'm going to continue down the side, tiptoe down the sideline for 3 or 4 more yards. And in that position, the defense is helpless at that point.
How many times have you seen Mahomes 2 yards short run into the guy, lower the shoulder, and get the first down by running him over? You don't know what he's going to do. So you can't, and it's not just Mahomes. It's a lot of quarterbacks, but Mahomes is the one that's going to, he's got the new Brady rule. You know, don't touch him, because if you touch him, it's a penalty. I mean, I was glad they didn't give him the other one on the sideline where he kind of tried to bait it. And listen, the guy he's playing with this week probably does it more than he does Allen. Allen's a flopper amongst floppers. But you know what? But so is Mahomes, and Mahomes probably gets more calls than Allen. So it's I don't know, man, a little crazy.
We see Mahomes more. That's why we've noticed it more.
I mean, if you watch Allen a lot, especially watching him against the Jet games, he's calling for penalties as he's still running. You know, I mean, it's hysterical to watch Josh do it. But Mahomes, though, I mean, that was egregious.
When Troy Aikman's saying, oh, come on, man.
Oh, he lost it. And he was right.
Yeah. And this is the quarterback saying it.
That was Mahomes' only magic moment of the day was that drive, because he's falling down on third down and he hits Kelce. Oh. He throws a dart while falling down without having either leg, just pure arm as he's falling, and gets a dart to Kelce in the end zone. that makes it 20-12, and pretty much it's over at that point.
Yeah.
You know, Houston gets it back. They get the 4th and 10, and rather than punting it, they go for it. But they didn't seem to have a play in. And Aikman's yelling timeout. Aikman, who I think did a great job in this game, is yelling, oh, yeah, timeout, timeout, timeout. They wouldn't call it. They rush a play. They don't get anywhere. They take the sack, and Kansas City starts on the Houston 44. And at that point, you know, you're saying, oh, they just gave them points. But they didn't. They held up. It was just weird, Jake.
The one thing that will, as we go through these games, all of the teams that lost outgained their opponent, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. It was a very interesting weekend in that point.
Houston 336, Kansas City 212. So it wasn't like Houston wasn't moving the ball, but they just weren't. They weren't scoring.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, after Houston goes three and out, you know, bad punt. Chiefs start at the Houston 45. They get the 3 points on the field goal, go up 23-12 on a 4th and 1. That if the game was closer, they'd probably go for. And it was actually just a bad job by Worthy. He would have had the first down. He just fell down. He had the first down. He just didn't know where he was. He turned around and he fell. But 23-12. The next drive, interesting, because you don't see this very often. Kansas City had 4 sacks on a drive. You know, how often do you see 4 sacks on one drive? And blocked the field. And then Houston still drove down the field. And Chanel blocks the field goal because he kicked it so low. And that was it. Chiefs got it back, run it out. They take the late safety. The people that thought they were safe at 11 lose. And the Chiefs escaped 23-14. Houston outplayed them, I thought. I thought Houston was the better team if you watched the game for the first 3 quarters anyway, even though they were never in the lead. I mean, you know, you felt like they were the better team watching the game. But Kansas City, who I think looked really rusty in this one, found a way to win it. And they move on to the championship game, Jay.
And with the win, the last 14 AFC title games have now included either Brady or Mahomes for the last 14 years, and that's pretty crazy.
The funny thing is that this might have been the least entertaining game of the weekend. I think it was, actually. I mean, and you know what? The funny thing is that the team that lost had every reason to be in it, and it's more thought of as the penalty game, even though the penalties don't necessarily reflect the outcome of the score, than it was about the Chiefs winning a game. It's all about Mahomes getting the breaks, and I thought that that's somewhat deserved. I mean, you know, both of those calls were wrong. You know, I don't know what else to say. And I'm a Chiefs fan.
Then the next game we're going to talk about was a blatant hit on the quarterback that should have been called and wasn't.
And there was also a face mask called the other way that was not nowhere near mask. Yeah. You had two things, one for each team in this one, that were just horrible calls.
Let's move to the
second. Gino, why don't we talk about that?
Why don't you give us the, even though you were at a wedding, why don't you give us the outline of this one?
This all is all you, so, G.
Washington wins 45-31. Rookie quarterback Jaden Daniels and the 6-seeded Washington Commanders shocked the top-seeded Lions with the victory, advancing to the NFC Championship for the first time in 33 years. Daniels dazzled with 299 yards passing, 2 touchdowns, 0 turnovers. He also ran the ball 16 times for 51 yards. Washington running backs had 182 yards and 3 touchdowns, 2 by Brian Robinson, 1 by Jeremy McNichols. And by the way, some of those yards were some great yards picked up by Austin Eckler. While the Washington defense delivered 2 of their 4 game-changing interceptions to fuel the victory, for the Lions, Gibbs 14 for 105 and 2 touchdowns on the ground, 6 catches for 70 yards receiving. Amon-Ra had 8 receptions for 137 yards, but they also committed 5 turnovers in the loss. Washington now, after overcoming long odds and defying expectations all season, advances to the conference championship. A couple of points in the game. Both teams combined for 42 points in the second quarter. Washington 28, the Lions 14. Yards, Detroit 521, Washington 481. Still outgained them, but closer. Washington, and we talked about this, they had to have the ball longer periods of time. Time of possession, Washington 34, Detroit 26. That's my update. I'm one happy guy. I'll tell you right now, I'm shocked. I got asked the next day after this, I was with some family and they asked me, okay, you're playing next week. Who do you want to play? Do you want to play Philly or do you want to play the Rams? And I said, you know what? I don't care because the team I thought was the best team out there, we just beat last night. So I didn't really care who they play. But listen, it's a great victory for the team, I have to tell you. Darren, you want to start it?
Yeah, a couple quick things on this one. I thought it would be a 14-point game. I just had it the other way. I really did. I thought Detroit would pull away and get the 14-point win. I didn't expect it. Washington's offense was incredible this entire game. First drive, they get down the field, 4th-and-1. They go for it from the 28. They try Mariota. Does not work. Doesn't even look like he's trying. I don't know why. I don't know what it looked like. It's like somebody grabbed his leg or he was in quicksand. He didn't even move. And then it was like, oh, don't worry about it. I was like, oh, you got to take the points. Got to take the points. But they didn't. Yeah. And he didn't do it all game. So it didn't matter. Detroit, you know, makes it look easy early on, right? I mean, they're just making chunk play after chunk play. You can't touch Gibbs. Montgomery looks okay. You know, Jameson Williams is faster than everybody else. St. Brown is open. You know, you're sitting there, you know, doing that. Gibbs gets in from the 1 yard out. They make it look easy. They're up 7-0. Washington answers with the field goal, 7-3. Then this is one of the first pivotal plays of the game, right? Detroit's moving down the field easy. They get down to a 3rd-and-1, and you get the sack fumble. Doris Armstrong gets him. Louisville recovers it. I thought they were going to go up 14-3 at that point. They were just moving so easily and effortlessly, but they get nothing out of it. And then Washington answers with a big play to Brown, who didn't have a ton of catches, but every catch he made seemed like it was for 20 yards plus, right? He was there. They go for it on the 4th-and-3 from the 9. I would have kicked it, but they went for it and they made it. So it didn't matter what I would have done. Ertz catches it. They get in. And then they get a PI in the end zone, and the next play move a little closer, and Robinson gets in 2 plays later. They're up 10-7. But Detroit answers right back, and an amazing catch by Laporta in the end zone. I didn't think he had any shot at it. That was beautiful. Oh, my God. I was like, oh, this kid is great. But then Washington says, screw you. 3 plays, 70 yards, 58 yards to McLaurin. They go up 17-14. I'm like, wow, this is fun. This is just opposite of the first game we saw where there was nothing but lack of execution. And then we get the pick six, and Kev, you pointed it out, the egregious hit.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't have negated the interception. It was during the return, but you know you've got Goff not really part of the play, and the defender comes back and that was so blatant helmet to helmet, and nothing called. I mean that's the type of stuff that drives the NFL fans crazy about what Mahomes gets and what other quarterbacks don't.
I got to be honest. I just think they missed it because I even think like jet quarterbacks would get that call. That was how bad that one was. I don't think there's any way. I just think they missed it, but they shouldn't have. But it doesn't matter. And they were up 24-14. And then Detroit answers so quickly. 3 plays, 73-yard. Jameson Williams looks like he's toying with everybody as he goes down the field. And it's 24-21. Nobody could touch him. It was ridiculous. But then Washington again, another 38-yard pass to Brown. They get it. They touchdown pass to Ertz, and they're up. I mean, it was like, oh my god! It was like watching a track meet. It was great. And then Detroit drives so down the field so quickly, but Goff gets picked off in the end zone, and that's when you say to yourself, "All right, Goff is having one of these games now. He's fumbled once, and he threw 2 picks. Remember when he did that? Was it who did he do the 5 turns? Was it the Texans? And they beat him. I'm trying to remember who it was. He had the 5 turnovers against somebody, and they still won.
Darren, in addition to that. Remember, that pass to Laporta, although Laporta made a great catch, basically Goff missed him. That pass should have been a hell of a lot close to him. So
he was open.
I mean, it's not like it's not like he was on. He was off most of the day. Go ahead, continue, sir.
No, you're right. So it's 24-14, and then all of a sudden Washington gets the ball to start the. Was it 31-21? And Washington gets the ball to start the third quarter. And you're like, oh my god! And they punt for the only time all day. They have all this momentum. It's the only time they punted the entire game. I was like, oh my god! And the Detroit tries to answer. And they do. 91-yard drive, 11 plays. Gibbs punches it in again, and it's a 3-point game. And you're like, all right, here comes Detroit. Now Washington had a punt. They figured something out, whatever. But Washington comes right back, answer 15 plays, 70 yards, 8 minutes and 28 seconds. And then, 4th-and-2 from Daniels from the 16, he gets 3 yards. Detroit has too many men on the field on another 4th-and-2. which gives them the automatic first down, which I couldn't understand how you have more that at the 5 yard line. And then Robinson scored two plays later. They're up 38-28. You're like, all right, Washington is not going away. And then, you know, then they tried to do the trick play, which I didn't understand when you're down 10 points with the Jameson Williams pass. And you're like, I don't know why you're trying that, G.
I think, honestly, I think that's when I said to myself, okay, we got Campbell. We got him a little flustered right now. When he's trying trick plays like that. And the other thing was, you know, just as I was watching this, we couldn't stop Gibbs all day. I don't know why he didn't keep going to Gibbs. I know they throw the ball a ton. Don't get me wrong, but you know, he had 14 carries. He had 8 receptions. He touched the ball 20 times. We couldn't touch him. He had 175 yards and 2 touchdowns in this game.
Yeah, I mean, Detroit is weird the way they call games, because you'll see games where they just run it, and don't throw it at all with Goff. And this game, I know that they were trailing by 3 points a lot, maybe 10, but they were running the ball so effectively, and you can run on Washington. That's been one of the things all year. I was surprised by that, too. Listen, Washington was the better team. They executed great. Jaden Daniels does not look like a rookie in any way, shape, or form. The kid does not look flustered at all. Listen, I know Detroit's defense was banged up, and I know that they're not that good to start anyway, but doesn't matter. I mean, this is a kid playing on the road in a raucous place, and they blew out the one seed. They didn't just beat him. They beat the crap out of him, G. I mean, you know, Kev, any thoughts on this? I mean, it was ridiculous.
No, you summed it up great. You know, I think, you know, last week, I thought maybe when I was picking the Lions, I said, you know what? I kept waiting for the Lions defense to show the lack of the players they have at this point with all the injuries they've had, and they hadn't yet, and Washington exposed them. And you could tell that they were just had nobody left. And, you know, all the credit in the world to Daniels, who was terrific, probably putting together one of the best rookie seasons in history. Of any position, any player. I would say top quarterback, but maybe top ever. You know, you think back, you know, Ditka, yeah. James Brown. You know, I mean, that's the level he's at right now with rookie seasons.
Yeah, I mean, you sit there, you look at the rookie quarterbacks that went far in the playoffs. He better season than Sanchez did, not to insult Sanchez. No. Better season than Roethlisberger did. You know, all these guys that had these great rookie runs, he's done stuff. I mean, you remember, Mahomes didn't play his rookie year. Brady didn't play his rookie year. You know, these guys didn't even see the field. This kid's coming out here after losing, you know, listen, Brian Kelly at LSU. You know, you had Daniels. You had Brian Thomas. You know, you had all these stars on this team. I'm skipping the other receiver. I don't know why. I'm blanking on him. And they didn't even make the playoff. You know, so I'm just saying. What is Brian Kelly doing? But nonetheless, just
he had no chance to win the title at Notre Dame, so he went to LSU. Remember that?
Yeah, absolutely. LSU, you get to make the playoffs since.
The one thing I just want to add is the thing that really is so encouraging with this team right now is this is 2 playoff games. We have held the ball time and possession wise at least 8 minutes more than the opponent in both games. And our drives are consistently long drives. And it's something, I mean, right now they got something going, because when you have drives like that, you're keeping their defense on the field. Your guys are getting rest. Your defense is getting rest. And offensively, you're moving the ball. And when you have these type of drives, you know, it's so encouraging, you know. That was one of the reasons why when I got asked that question about my opponent for next week, I'm like, for me right now, I don't care, because they're moving the ball so well right now, and it could change. I get that, but
I would have wanted the Rams.
They're moving the ball so well that, you know, it's unbelievable.
I would have rather avoided Saquon with my run defense, but that's just
We're gonna get to that right now. So let's move to Sunday.
Yep.
Philly beats the Rams 28-22. Barkley led the Eagles to the victory, rushing for 205 yards, 2 long touchdown runs, a 62-yarder, and a game-sealing 78-yarder in the snowy conditions. Eagles defense forced multiple turnovers, including a critical strip sack of Stafford. Jalen Hurts added a 45-yard touchdown run. With the win, the Eagles will host the NFC Championship game versus Washington. Barkley had a dominant performance. He capitalized and Philadelphia capitalized on the defense that the Rams made some mistakes on defense. Total yards in the game, Rams 402, Philly 350, so they outgained them by 52 yards. Time of possession, though, Philly had the ball two more minutes, 31-29. As far as time of possession, it was pretty even. Philly goes on. They face Washington next week. Darren?
This was the ultimate feast of famine game, right? Philly did nothing on a lot of drives, and then when they did, they had huge plays. So it was a 44-yarder from Hurts, a 62-yarder from Barkley, a 78-yarder from Barkley. Meanwhile, the Rams, two touchdown drives with 13 plays, 67 yards, 10 plays, 70 yards. So the Rams needed to do a little bit more. You know, Philly missed the extra point with twice. They missed two extra points in the game with Elliott. It was the 2 second-half turnovers that really kind of put this game away, though, for Philly. Kyren Williams, who does fumble a lot, fumbled, and Stafford on back-to-back possessions. This game was 16-15. Game was 7-6 Rams, and it was 13-7, you know, tied at 13. The Eagles go up 16-13. Rams get the safety to cut it to 16-15, and then the back-to-back turnovers gave him 6 points. So 16-15 became 22-15, just like that. They go three and out, down 22-15, and one play later, Barkley goes 78 yards. They miss another extra point to keep him in the game. So it's 28-15, helps keep him in the game, 28-15. L.A. gets their second touchdown to cut it to 28-22. Philly gets the ball back with 2:48 and go three and out. Bad rollout sack. Rams used their timeouts well. You could listen. The one thing you can say, McVay's a good coach because his team is young on defense. They don't have a lot of experience, and even some of the guys that are a little more experienced, like Roseboom, just aren't great players. They're okay, and he's got explosive offensive players to an extent, but his old line isn't great, and he finds a way to galvanize this team. LA gets the ball back, and they get the big 37-yard pass to Nacua down the sideline, which was great. And you're saying to yourself, oh, my God, we have a finish. We have a finish. We didn't have a finish in the first two games. We have a finish in this one. And then, you know, basically at that point, not much happens. And Collinsworth, who can annoy the hell out of you, had one great point in this because the Rams start to huddle up on a pass completion on an out-of-bounds play. And Collinsworth's like, I wouldn't do that. They're exhausted. Don't give them a chance to sub. And they did. And all of a sudden, Jalen Carter on those last two plays looked like he was rested because he got the sack, and then he got the pressure that forced the incompletion to kind of hold it down, Kev. I thought that the Rams had a chance, and if they would have done what Collinsworth done, I wasn't thinking about it the way he brought it up before I thought about it, but I was like, he's right. They should not give him a break.
Yeah. I mean, you had the offense rolling. You just had the long drive, the drive before that. You're marching down the field great this time. I mean, especially playing hurry up both drives. And you get a third and two at the 13, and you give them a chance to huddle up, to take a breath. And Carter comes right up the middle, sacked him for a 9-yard loss. I mean, Stafford had no shot in that one. Nope. No time to throw it away even. I mean, I can't blame Stafford for that sack. That was totally on the offensive line, and great play by Carter on the stop there, coming around and just blowing by. And then you set up 4th and 11, and the Rams did a good job there of making sure, you know, that's a veteran quarterback there. No panic, still plenty of time left. Get the team organized, get them settled, get them lined up in the play. But again, you know, you had a chance for Philly to get some pressure on them.
And it was Carter again.
Carter again, and Stafford threw the ball before he wanted to, really, and wide of the target, and the game was over.
And Dotson also committed a false start on that sequence as well. So the old line kind of made three mistakes in four plays there that really kind of doomed them. The Rams showed some fight. I was rooting for him. I was rooting hard for him. I picked him to go to the Super Bowl, so I was going to stick with it. I kind of catch myself somewhat enjoying that team. But yeah, I mean, Rams had 7 sacks, 324 yards passing, 111 yards rushing. Didn't matter. The Eagles did a lot. Here's the thing. Hurts gets hurt in this game.
Yeah.
And now the RPO looks different if he can't run. I mean, we're going to talk about that as we preview the next one, but I'm just saying.
Very, very careful with even with the tush push. You know, they were
they stopped doing it.
They stopped doing it. I thought, you know, the Rams looked great in the first half, and then the second half, once the snow was really picking up and sticking and everything else, it looked like, you know, especially with the two fumbles by Williams and Stafford, that they were, the elements were affecting them. But then they overcame that part to put together two great drives at the end of the game, almost pulled it out.
Yep.
All right.
That was that.
And then we get to the last game.
The main course.
Buffalo beats Baltimore 27-25. Josh Allen led the Bills with two running TD scores. The Bills forced three turnovers to beat the Ravens on a snow-slicked field. Ravens had a chance to tie after an Isaiah Likely 24-yard touchdown with 1:33 left. Wide-open Mark Andrews dropped a two-point conversion for the tie, and after an unsuccessful onside kick, the Bills secured the victory. In the game, Baltimore 416 yards, Buffalo 273. So a lot more yards. Buffalo will go to Kansas City next week. Darren?
It's hard not to watch this game and say Baltimore's the best team in football. They were better than Buffalo.
They were.
They would beat Kansas City. They would beat Philly. They would beat Washington. They just made three turnovers. And I think that that's what really stands out in this one. I mean, Buffalo jumped out on them, you know, and listen, Buffalo's an excellent team. This isn't a shot at Buffalo. Just Baltimore is just so stacked, and they're playing without Zay Flowers, and it looks like you can't cover them. But, you know, the three turnovers, I think, the three turnovers were the whole difference of the game, and obviously the drop pass on the two-point conversion, Kev. I mean, that's really what stood out to me watching this one.
You know, the first half, while Baltimore – you know, you had the back-to-back drives where Jackson threw the interception and then fumbled. Just shot any sort of momentum that the Ravens had. I mean, they went down the field opening drive, 8 plays, 70 yards. Looked easy. Buffalo response to tie the game up. But then especially after that fumble, you give the Buffalo the ball at the 24. Short
Von
field.
Miller.
Von Miller. And Allen.
80 years old, chugging.
Chugging away there. And then they also picked up the touchdown before the half there to go up 21-10. And they looked like they're in trouble. Then the Baltimore defense figured things out. A punt set up a field goal. Another punt set up their touchdown. And then that touchdown drive, they ran the ball down the field so well. And then the two-point conversion, they try to throw a pass. We texted each other going, I don't understand why you're trying the pass there. You've just ran it down the throats. Hand it off again to Derrick Henry. And I didn't mind going for two there because you had the defense on their heels. You had a chance to tie the game. That's the type of the situation where it wasn't one play. It wasn't this fluke or anything like that. You just dominated the team down the field. Go for two. Go for the tie.
That drive, 7 plays, 80 yards. 68 of those yards were on the ground on 6 carries. So you averaged, you know, 11 and a half yards a touch, and you're afraid of getting two? I don't understand it.
Yeah. So he said, so Buffalo's still up two. They respond with the field goal. Then Andrews with the fumble, which sets up
great
Buffalo.
Great strip, for though. It was a great strip by Bernard. Yeah. It really was. But
you just don't expect Andrews to see that. He had a drop earlier in the game also.
Yeah, he did.
And, you know, one of Andrews.
And so did Henry, by the way. Henry had a huge drop on a pass. I mean, they made blunder after blunder, and Buffalo really didn't make any.
Yep. And it was 27-19, and Baltimore still had one drive left. Nice pass to 24 yards to Likely to get him in position, and Andrews just falling backwards a little bit. You know, you can make some, but it's in his hands. You got to catch that.
Yep.
And the interesting thing about the 27-19 part is Buffalo gets the ball. They go 11 plays, 52 yards. They get the first and goal from the 10. They get it down to the 2 on third down, and they try the Allen run. And for the first time all game, he got stuffed. And that's kept them in the game because otherwise it becomes a 2-score game.
Yep.
And you had to take the 3 at that point to go up 8. You can't take the risk after you just got stuffed with your play. I mean the Andrews drop was, you know, it hit him in the hands. I mean, I don't know. He's got to catch it.
Yep.
If I told you Detroit and Baltimore were both going to lose in the division round, you'd be surprised, but if I told you they had 8 turnovers combined, you wouldn't be so surprised.
And their opponents had 0.
Yeah, I mean, it's you see it and you understand why.
Now, I picked Buffalo to win this, so I picked them by I think 3. Or no, I picked them by 6. But I didn't think Detroit would lose. I really didn't. Sorry, G. I really didn't think there was any chance
that
they got blown out.
Listen, I did not think Washington was going to win that game. I did not. I thought they were going to keep it close, and then fourth quarter, Detroit tacks on a couple of scores, and they wind up losing. But I did not see that one coming. Are we picking these games now, or are we doing it now?
Sure, why not?
Sure.
All right, so we got Philly minus six against Washington, Kansas City minus 1.5 against Buffalo. I'll start it off. Let's make it easy.
What are you taking, G?
I love the way Washington is playing right now. I love getting six, but I love the way they're playing right now. I think they're going to the Super Bowl. I think this is a winnable game for them. They're going to control the ball. They're going to probably do exactly what they've been doing the last 2 weeks. They're going to limit Barkley to, you know, as least amount of touches as they can. And I think they're going to win this game. Moneyline has Washington at plus 230, which I just absolutely love. Give me Washington plus the six, though.
All right, Kev. All right. This is interesting, right? Washington looked unstoppable inside. How are they going to look in the elements in Philly? Question. Hurts is banged up. Can he run the RPO? It's a question. Both teams won the turnover battle last week and did not turn the ball over themselves. Question. Philly had some severe kicking woes. Can Philly get their receivers involved because they haven't been all playoff long? Can Washington slow down Barkley because they haven't shown they could really stop the run? Washington loses Cosme on the offensive line. How do they contain Jalen Carter with a loss of a guy like Cosme? So these are the question marks I go in here. Here's my thoughts. And I think that Philly wins, and I think that Philly covers this game. And I think the reason why is I think that they're going to be able to run the ball, and it's going to set up passes man-to-man with two superior receivers to the corners that are trying to cover them. Lattimore played well last week. I'm not saying he didn't. But I think that Philadelphia is probably just got a little too many weapons for the Washington defense. And I think up front defensively, especially with the loss of Cosme, who's really one of those standout guys up there for Washington. I don't love the line, but Cosme's one of the guys I did like. I think that Jalen Carter's going to wreak havoc, even with the double teams. I think that they're going to put pressure on Daniels, which does put him in trouble. I think that Philadelphia is going to win this game. I think it's going to be, I'm not saying it's going to be a blowout, but I think it's going to be 31-21. I'll give the score as. So I'm gonna take Philly minus the six. Kev,
boy, that injury to Hurts scares me. That's one thing that could slow down this Philadelphia offense. You know, Barkley's gonna run all over Washington. I, you know, 175 yards would not surprise me from Barkley there. And I think, Darren, like you hit it, Cosme's injury is huge against that defensive line against Carter. I think Daniels is going to do enough to escape a few times, but they're going to get him enough to slow down the offense to keep him under 30, if you can believe that's going to slow him down. I think Philly does cover. I think it's just barely. I think they do win by a touchdown, you know, somewhere in that 31-24, 34-27 type of thing, a final. But Philly just barely covers. They win by the touchdown.
Okay.
I am rooting for Washington, in case anybody's curious. Okay. I do not root for Philly anything, and it's not because of Geno.
One thing you said, Darren, that when you talk about the Philly offense, you could have said the same thing about Detroit's offense last week. The Cosme injury has me worried, I will tell you that. But okay. And in the other game, Kansas City is a 1.5-point favorite against Buffalo. I think this is where Buffalo breaks the curse. I think this is Josh Allen. I think they finally get it done. And I think Mahomes is a little bit off, and just him being a little bit off means that Kansas City loses this game. I'm taking Buffalo plus the 1.5. I will tell you, Buffalo is plus 105 on the money line. And if I decide to parlay Washington plus Buffalo, the parlay on the money line is plus 576. Which is some crazy odds right now. So, but give me Buffalo plus 1.5. Kev?
Gino, I'm going to agree with you there. I think Chiefs looked rusty last week. I think they shaked off some of the rust. But I don't like this passing attack. I think with Buffalo, you know, their linebackers have gotten healthier and have come back during the year. I think they're getting into rhythm here. I think they'll find a way of at least slowing down Kelce. And by slowing him down, I mean, you know, six catches for 80 yards is slowing him down compared to the 130. Unless Mahomes could get somebody on the outside, I just don't see them being able to consistently move the ball. Cook is running real well right now for the Bills. I think they've got enough playmakers outside, and with Allen's scrambling ability, I think Buffalo pulls this one out. I think they're going to win in that 21-17 type of neighborhood.
Okay.
Now it's down to me.
Darren?
Well, can the Chiefs keep Josh Allen in the pocket? Can they keep him from running outside? Can Buffalo get the big game from Cook that they need? Because last week they didn't even try to throw much. They were really running the ball almost the entire game. Can Kansas City get the receivers involved, much like you brought up, Kev, because they're not going to be able to do it with just Kelce. And I think McDermott's smart enough to take Kelce out of this game. And don't you just think it's Buffalo's turn? I mean, I don't. Kansas City 23, Buffalo 20. I think the Chiefs find a way. I think Buffalo's better. I think that for some strange reason, sometimes getting over this little hump is not that easy.
Yep.
Would I be surprised if Buffalo won this game? No, I wouldn't be surprised if Buffalo won the game by 14. I think Buffalo's really good. I just think Kansas City's got this little magical thing on them. I think they find a way. 23-20, Chiefs winning cover.
Okay.
For the first time all season, I have two favorites, and Geno has two underdogs.
That is true.
Kevin, as usual, splits the middle.
Yep. I'm rooting against both of your teams. Not necessarily rooting against them.
Kevin playing pie gal. He's winning the high, losing the low.
That's right.
We had two NFL coaching hires. Ben Johnson goes to the Bears, leaves Detroit. Aaron Glenn leaves Detroit, goes to the Jets. Kev, I'll give you the floor.
Aaron Glenn wanted the Jet job, and he got it. I'm not saying Detroit's defense has looked great. I mean, they were looking better to start the year. The injuries just weighed them down towards the end of the season. Aaron Glenn had nobody left on defense to play. That being said, you know, all the positives that you hear about him, you know, fiery guy, everything else. He's a former Jet first-round pick going back 30 years. I just hope it's not the same mistake of what they did 4 years ago with Saleh and another first-time head coach. And I would bring in probably, what's it, Landmark, the Washington.
That's who they're saying.
GM is supposedly the leading candidate, another first-time GM. I'd rather have somebody with experience in one of those positions. I'm afraid it's going to be another treadmill of just, you know, yeah, we're going to do something, you know, get near 500 and fall back too quickly. But I'm rooting for Aaron Glenn. He was one of my favorite Jets to watch. I mean, a little undersized at the corner, but boy, could he play.
He was a great corner, two-time All-Pro. Listen, I'm happy with the Aaron Glenn signing. I know that it's not how you draw it up. I know it's, you know, you want to have an experienced coach. I was a little surprised they didn't even interview McCarthy. I thought that would be a guy you'd want to look at. The Newmark thing, you know, everyone says he's a great guy with lots of contacts, 26 years in the front offices. People say a lot of things between Detroit and Washington, and had a lot of involvement in bringing both Johnson and Glenn in. Glenn had worked his way up from a scout to all the way through every position you can to the defensive coordinator. He seems to be not just a player's coach, but kind of more of a he's a disciple of Parcells. And there's something about that you like, because the Parcells tree has been a lot better than a lot of the other trees that you see. He's a Jet. You know, I'm going to give a Jet a chance. I love them. And when you're a Jet all the way from your first cigarette.
Day.
So let's go Aaron Glenn. As far as Ben Johnson goes, listen, he gave him a ton of money. He's a hell of a, you know, offensive coordinator. I thought sometimes he gets too cute because he has all this talent. I don't know if he's going to be able to be as cute in Chicago, but we're going to find out. We're going to find out if he's going to be as cute on outdoor stadium in a cold weather day, or if he's going to have it all. But he's obviously very much of a offensive play calling genius with all the weapons he had. So let's see what happens.
I am surprised at both of you. I have to tell you right now. I can't believe that you are okay with this. And I think part of it is because he's a Jet. He was a Jet. He played for the Jets.
Absolutely. I'm biased as hell on this. I love Aaron Glenn as a player.
All right. Yeah. So first off, this is the repeat for the Jets. No GM again. No GM again. Okay. Yeah. You made some of these points, Kev. No GM. Yeah. No head coaching experience. And he's a defensive coach. Have they not learned?
Well, here's the thing. They're different coaches, though. Saleh was a rah-rah guy who didn't even try to get involved in the offense. Glenn is going to be a guy that does get involved in the offense.
Darren, since Rex Ryan, it was Todd Bowles, the defensive coach. It was Gase, a Miami head coach. But it was an offensive coach before that who was a bad head coach. But again, no GM, no experience. I don't know.
Glenn would have been my third choice. I would have had McCarthy and Flores ahead of him.
But I'm
not devastated by it. Listen, I haven't made the playoffs in 14 years. I want hope. I want a fiery guy that's angry, and Aaron Glenn brings me that. Let me see if he does anything.
All right, and listen, I don't know if he's going to be a good coach. I don't know if he's going to be a bad coach. It's just the whole process with the Jets is what down the same road.
Yep. You know, every point you've made is 1,000% correct, and I'm going to show optimism in the form of Jet.
I know you are, regardless.
His statement today was, Jet fans get used to winning.
Yeah, okay.
Listen, I know it's bull, but I was ecstatic. I read that with a smile.
Let's move on.
What's his motto going to be? I read something. His motto is going to be like, make the Jets great again. The problem is we've never had a great – to make them great again.
We were great in 1969 before any of us – 68 before we were really involved. Actually, the 69 season was probably better than the 68 season. They just lost to the Chiefs in the playoffs.
Yep.
Not that any of us saw it. I'm just saying.
All right. Let's move to some baseball notes. So
– yep.
The Dodgers have signed Roky Sasaki. They signed Tanner Scott, 4 years, $72
million. Kirby Yates is next, by the way.
The rumor is they are signing Kirby Yates. That has not happened yet. Toronto signed Anthony Santander, 5 years, $90 million. Mets brought in A.J. Minter, 2 years, $22 million. We'll get to the Hall of Fame in a sec. A's. One note I wanted to just bring out, they're swapping out the logo, the elephant logo on their sleeve for the Sacramento Tower Bridge logo. Just a little
thank God
dig into moving into Sacramento. Any comments on these signings? A.J. Minter, the Dodgers, anything?
Minter solid. They needed a lefty in the bullpen.
When he stays healthy, he's good. He's real good. He's got to stay healthy.
You know, you look at his numbers for his career, they're better than Scott. Scott's been much, much better the last 2 years.
Yep.
4 years, $72 million for Scott. I thought that was a great overpay.
Yeah. But the Dodgers are, you know, they've got money to spend, apparently, and don't mind spending it.
I don't think that – I mean, listen, the Sasaki thing was kind of devastating, too. I was at the end when I know the Padres bowed out because I saw them sign 2 17-year-olds, and I said, there goes the international money. They're not in. I was praying for the Blue Jays, you believe that, just because the Dodgers are so unlikable right now.
Oh.
And they are actually – you can say what you want about the Yankees back in the day. The Yankees championship teams were not this way. Yankees championship teams were the – where the team was better than the sum of the parts was better than the individual pieces. The 2000s teams that didn't win much, that was when they started buying people and you saw that they didn't win. And that's why I think the Dodgers are not going to win all these championships. You have a bunch of starting pitchers that you don't know about. You still have that. You still don't know what Yamamoto is going to be. You still, I mean, Sasaki's a kid. You know, his numbers look amazing. You still don't know. Snell, I don't trust Snell. I mean, I didn't want Snell. I'm glad they got Snell. Snell's going to be on the DL 3 of his 5 years. That's fine. That works out well. And, you know, but
Tani off two Tommy Johns, the second Tommy John.
What's he going to do? Listen, he's going to hit. But Freddie Freeman's getting older. The offense is going to start getting a little bit slowed down, in my opinion. But the Dodgers are signing everybody. I thought the Minter signing was good. I thought Santander was going to get more than he got. I was a little surprised he came in at $18 million a year. I figured he'd get about 22. I figured that number would be closer to five-year 110. So, obviously, I don't know what the hell I'm thinking about when it comes to contracts, because Soto's getting $800 million a year and Santander's getting 18. You know, listen, Soto's great. Don't get me wrong. The Mets need another bat. They got to find a way to keep Alonso or get somebody else.
Beat still inside.
Yeah, I mean, they have to find a way to bring him back, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm surprised that a lot of these mid-level teams have did not even try to make an offer to either Tanner Scott or Kirby Yates. You know, the Baltimores, the Kansas Cities, Pittsburgh, Detroit, you know.
I got to be honest, the Mets could use two relievers, not one.
Mets, I really wouldn't mind them going out 1 year for David Robertson.
I mean, you know, I was surprised.
Yeah,
I was surprised that Tanner Scott and Kirby Yates lasted this long, and they're the, you know, we heard nothing else with any other offers for any of these teams saying they wanted them. That was the only thing for me. You know, you got Baltimore's just one of those confusing teams. You know, we thought they were really close. You know, Kimbrel was a disaster. Did they come back and, you know, bring in Tanner Scott or bring in Yates? Somebody? No. You know, and the Dodgers signed him. So,
yeah.
All right. The other baseball point was Hall of Fame inductions. They have now brought in three guys who will be coming in this year: Ichiro, CC Sabathia, and Billy Wagner. Ichiro to me is a no-brainer. Sabathia to me was close, but I thought he deserved to get in. Wagner's the guy that to me was close, but he's got great numbers. I don't know how much that means to you guys. I thought Wagner was probably a no if you really asked me, but he's in now. So what do you guys think?
I think Ichiro, like I said, no-brainer. I don't know who was one guy that didn't vote for him. I mean, why? Sabathia, you know, overall numbers, I mean, I did looked him up. Boy, he's almost equivalent to Jack Morris. Slightly better ERA, but Morris has those postseason performances. You know, he's got that 1-0 game. What's CeCe's game?
You know what? He carried the Yankees in 09, though. He did. He was the arm. They may not have been gems because A-Rod got a lot of credit for that year. But Sabathia takes the ball a lot.
Oh, he was a workhorse. But, you know, now you're splitting hairs. Hall of Famer, probably first ballot. You know, first ballot used to mean something when we were growing up, and now it doesn't. And Billy Wagner, you know, terrific relief pitcher, bombed in the postseason, 14 games, 11 innings, 21 hits, 10 ERA, almost a 2 whip. You know, the regular season numbers were there. But, you know, again, he's just one of these, you know, good, solid, long-time reliever. Is he a Hall of Famer? I never watched him thinking, oh, I'm watching a Hall of Famer. And I think we were spoiled watching Mariano being in New York.
Partially, but I never – I agree with you, Kev. I never looked at him and said, oh, he's definitely a Hall of Famer.
No, I felt the same way. Billy Wagner should not be in the Hall of Fame. It's becoming the Hall of the Very Good. Billy Wagner was very good. He was not great. You never sat there and say, I'm watching greatness ever with Billy Wagner. Never.
Now, before I get to the next three guys, I was looking at next year's ballot.
Well, give me one sec, Kev. Give me one sec before you get there. Was there anybody that was on this ballot that you thought should have gotten in for this year?
Maybe Beltran.
You know,
I'd say he was close, but I don't think he deserved to get in this year either.
Andrew Jones?
No.
Okay.
I think that we celebrate Andrew Jones as, you know, one World Series against the Yankees much greater than other people. He was a great defensive outfielder, but he hit 250 every fucking year.
Yeah. So looking at next year, you know, Cole Hamels, Ryan Braun, Alex Gordon, Sin Shu Chu, Edwin Encarnacion. Stop me when you stay a Hall of Famer, please.
There's Howie no one there.
Dick Markakis, Hunter Pence, Gio Gonzalez, Matt Kemp, Jason Kipnis, Dana Murphy, Rick Porcello, Matt Wieters, Jeff Samardzija, Chris Davis, Kelvin Herrera, Edison Volquez.
None of them are Hall of Famers, which means Beltran's got a shot at getting in.
Beltran, yep. 70% this year, probably gets in next year.
Beltran was very good. But in this market, he's always going to be remembered for the bat on his shoulder on strike three, which isn't fair because he was a very good player, but that's what a lot of Met fans will remember him as.
Andrew Jones, you know, 66% this year, coming up to the last couple of years of his eligibility.
He doesn't deserve it.
430 career home runs, but he hit 254. And to me, he had 1 year where he was a top 10 MVP.
Yeah, he won.
If he can't be, if you're not consistently getting top 10 MVPs year after year, how can you possibly be in the Hall of Fame? You're not that good.
Nope.
But he'll probably get really close next year, Kevin, if he doesn't get in.
And the other guy they talk about, who just under 40% this year, but made some gains, was Chase Utley.
Yeah.
Not a Hall of Famer. He's a good player, but not a Hall of Famer.
And to me, you know,
he's a Hall of Famer either.
He's at 40. You look at the ballot next year, there are a lot of guys who are going to be looking at it, just trying to fill out more than just one or two names, and at least kind of get some votes that way. 2005 to 2009, he was great.
That's it.
When you look, if you believe in Baseball Reference WAR, career 64, he had 40 of them during those 5 years. Yep. He had 146 of his 259 home runs in those 5 years. Top 15 MVP every year of those five. But that was it. After those 5 years, the injuries killed him. He was a lifetime 275. On top for 5 years. I mean, if he gets in, where's Don Mattingly's ticket to the Hall of Fame? Because, damn it, he should be in well ahead of Chase Utley.
Yeah, absolutely. David Wright would have an argument over Chase Utley.
That was the other guy on my list, was David Wright.
I'm not trying to say it is an insult. I think David Wright's a really good player, but he's not a Hall of Famer.
No, and neither is
Chase Utley. I think Mattingly is, but I might be a little biased. But it's close, but I would have put Mattingly in.
Yeah. I mean, the holdovers, you've got A-Rod, right. You've got Manny, you've got Pettit. You know, the Pett guys, that, you know, they're going to be falling off, and, you know, the other guys are just,
One last point. The Dodgers should be thanking their lucky stars for one of the guys that made the Hall this year. Do you know who I'm talking about? Ichiro. Without Ichiro coming over and being the guy from Japan, that's the whole Dodger team now. The Dodgers are Japan squad. And Ichiro was the first. You know, listen, we had, you know, you had the Fat Toad. We had a Rabu. You know, you had Godzilla. You had Matsui. You had Shinzo come over. You had a bunch of different Japanese players. But Ichiro was the first. He was the trendsetter. And he was the guy that, you know, you felt like he got a hit every time he was up when you watched him. He was a great, great player.
I want to tell you guys one other thing, and that is, a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago, I told you about the Pittsburgh Pirates offer for that Paul Skeens baseball card.
Yep.
Remember?
Yeah.
An 11 year old kid in LA, California pulled the card yesterday.
Oh, God.
Wow. We do not know what the offer, if it's done, if it's anything, anyone has offered him cash, because then they would trade it in for that offer with Pittsburgh. We have no idea. But that card, that Paul Skeens auto, was pulled.
That's crazy.
And it was a week ago, last Wednesday, but it was announced after we recorded our last week's podcast, Bob Uecker.
Yeah.
Passed away last week. Boy, I mean, we grew up watching him on the Miller Lite commercials, of course, unbelievable in the movie Major League. His appearances on Johnny Carson's Tonight Show were epic.
Mr. Belvedere.
And Mr. Belvedere.
He was a great listen, and he called his last call. You know, is the home run by Alonso, basically. You know, I mean,
unfortunately for him,
you know, that's the last game he called. He was
heartbroken. You could tell.
Yeah, you could tell. This guy's 90 years old doing the games. It's like Vin Scully. You know, there's certain guys that just did the games, and you felt like their voices were going to be there forever to an extent, even Sterling to an extent, but not as talented as the other two guys I mentioned. But I love John Sterling as well, just because of the, you know, listening to him for as long as we did. But it's a sad day. Bob Uecker was, you know, the Major League stuff was just amazing. And the Miller Lite commercials were out of this world. His self-deprecation was amazing.
Any other sports points, guys?
I got quick NHL. Okay. One team had a very interesting week last week, the Buffalo Sabres. So they played Carolina last week. They won the game 4-2. Ryan McLeod gets credit for a hat trick. Third period, empty net. He comes down. He slashed while shooting. Normally would be a penalty shot, but since it's an empty net, he gets credited for a goal. That means that for the period, Buffalo Sabres had zero shots on goal, but scored a goal. First time that has ever happened since they started recording shots per period 1965-66 season.
That's a good one, Kev.
That's a great one. I did not have that one. You got me. You nights, thought we both had it.
Two nights later, they play against Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh goalie, and I'm sorry, Alex, I'm going to screw up your name. Alex Nedeljkovic.
Close enough.
He scored a goal from behind his own net, shot it down into the empty net, plus had an assist. First goalie in NHL history with 2 points in the game. So back-to-back games, Buffalo's been involved in something that never happened in NHL history. I just thought that was interesting.
Very good.
Very much so. Just one last point in tennis, because it's something that's really cool about Australian Open. Obviously, there's some good matches going on, but the Djokovic situation was pretty interesting. So last week, Novak Djokovic won his match, but apparently the day before, an Australian, columnist was heckling and insulting Serbian fans. So Djokovic is on the court afterwards, and they go to interview him, and he refuses the interview. And people just think he's, whatever. Everybody hated him from the vaccine thing and all the other stuff. So everybody always made a big deal about it. He got banned from Australia that year.
Yep.
So he addressed the media right away afterwards, before the narrative got spread, explained why he boycotted the interview, told everyone how uncomfortable he was with it. But he said he had to do it for his country, he had to do it for Serbia, because he felt it was unacceptable. He will not do the interview until there's an apology by that particular journalist. So we'll find out how that goes. But I thought that it's nice to see people stand up on principle every now and again, because most people are afraid to do that now against an angry mob. And I kind of respected Djokovic for his candor and what happened.
And then he goes out and the quarterfinal matchup against Alcaraz.
Mm-hmm.
He wins in four sets. I mean, 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
Pulls off just an incredible win. And he's into the semifinals looking to win Grand Slam 25, which would be the all-time record.
Yeah, he will go down as the best ever. He may not be the most popular, so he may not come out of people's mouths first, but he will have the records.
Oh, yeah. Because
the amount of time he's playing and the amount of consistency he has kind of reminds me of Ivan Lendl back in the day. Just not a lot of emotion when he's playing, and just a machine out there. But, we got a couple of Americans alive on the women's side. Obviously, Australia is the one that people watch the least, because the time switch makes it really tough.
Yeah.
You catch a few matches at night, and then everything's overnight, so you really can't get into it. And that's the problem. But, we'll see what happens with the Joker going down the stretch. Listen, we have NBA and college basketball. We're going to get more into that next week, along with some NHL. And we're going to really get heavily into each of those three sports over the next 3 weeks, trying to, give you midseason reports on everything and the race for March, which I have a ton to talk about with that. So it'll be a lot of fun. And that's pretty much it for us. Gee, anything else?
No, that's it. I'm good. Kevin, go, Commanders.
We're good.
All right. Gino, I hope your Commanders win. But this week was Go Bucky Go. Congratulations to the Ohio State Buckeyes for their national championship. Hadn't won one in 10 years, so good for them. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Kevin Gino, talking about the wonderful, wild, the wacky world of sports. A wacky world where some quarterbacks get penalty calls and some just don't. Please download the podcast anywhere you can get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, Audio Boom, whatever you like. Also, don't hesitate to follow us on Facebook and Instagram. We'd love to have you. Also, comment. We're going to be posting about the games this weekend. Tell us who you think is going to win. It's not like we're holding you to it. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.